world tomorrow. Herbert W. Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
Ladies and gentlemen, greetings. If you knew what is prophesied to happen to the United States, and that means to you and to yours, within the very next few years, you would be very vitally concerned. A staggering turn in world events is prophesied to happen in the very next few years. If it doesn't happen in this decade, it's almost certain to happen in the following decade. It's going to happen in your lifetime and very, very soon. It will violently involve the United States, Britain, Europe, the Middle East. And to a lesser extent, the entire world is going to be erupted in violence and in a staggering trouble that is going to come on the whole world. We're heading into it right now. Already it's rather late for the free world to come awake to the meaning behind today's world news. You get it in the news all over. All you get in the news today is bad news. But I have good news for you. Because out of this bad news is going to come really good news. But I have to tell you the bad news because that is in the imminent, immediate future. Why are the best minds unseeing to this thing that is coming on the world? Actually, the news events that you get in television news every day, you read in your newspapers every day, it's a forerunner. It portends it. And if you could put it together rightly, you should understand that it's leading somewhere and something is really going to happen. The world and its leaders are the product of modern education. And education has lulled us to sleep in a way. The most important dimension of knowledge has been omitted from education. It is not being taught. It is not generally known. You know, in this world, the things that we are able to do are almost awesome. If an Abraham Lincoln, or if an Emerson, or if a Vanderbilt, to mention a great politician, a great government man, a great president, and a great writer, and also a great financier, if they were to come back to life today, they all died in the 19th century, and if they were to come back to life today, they would be awestruck by the marvelous advances that have been made in the world. We think we're progressing. We have done such wonderful things. Now, I've been mentioning such things as sending men to the moon and back, sending unmanned spacecraft to send back photographs right on the very surface of Mars, to go fairly close, as astronomers consider it, to Jupiter and to Saturn, and to send back photographs that the astronomers say are absolutely mind-boggling, because it has opened up an entire new understanding to astronomers and to scientists. But you know, here I am speaking to you in my own studio, and I happen to be speaking to you from Tucson, Arizona. But you're not hearing it in Tucson, except, well, perhaps some of you are, because we're on a station here in Tucson. But nevertheless, it's going from the station from which you are hearing it over the air. You hear my voice just as if I were there in your living room or wherever you are watching at this time. Just take television. It's a marvelous thing. I was just thinking the other day back to the time when in the movies we had the first talkie, as we called it. The first talking picture with Al Jolson. That just excited the whole United States. I guess the whole world. I wasn't in other parts of the world at that time. But it was a marvelous thing. Yes, we've done marvelous things. Since then, we've added color. And now the movies have gone into something greater, and the things they do and the marvelous things they give you in your television screen on television are just almost beyond understanding. And yet, my friends, astronauts who go clear to the moon and back, come back, and can't get along with their own family. And pretty soon their family's broken up by divorce. And the children don't have a father and a mother with them any longer. What tragedy, but that's only one out of millions of cases that are happening all over. Yes, the family structure is breaking down. Crime is increasing. We have troubles all over the world. Nation is fighting against nation. Husband against wife, children against parents, and parents against children, black against white, capital against labor. And so it goes. Everybody's against everybody else, it seems. We're in that kind of a world. We're in a world of trouble, and we don't understand it. And yet we're in a world of magnificent progress. There has never been such progress in any time as in this 20th century. I've lived through most of it. I've lived longer than most of you because I've lived when we had kerosene lamps instead of electric lights. I remember the first telephones that we had, and they were on a wall, and there was a little crank that you had to turn, you know, if you wanted to ring central. And, of course, that rang everybody on your line. It was a party line, and everybody would come to listen and hear. And if you wanted to call someone, everybody on your line was going to listen in on your conversation and everything that you had to say. Well, that was the way people entertained themselves in those days. My, how much the telephone even has increased and improved since then. When I'm in Paris, I just take up the telephone, make a few dials, and I get whoever I want in this country without going through any operators or anybody. Just get them almost immediately. I can get anything that I want from almost anywhere in my automobile driving on the highway. I can call almost anybody from my airplane when I'm flying in the air over the middle of the Pacific or someplace. You know, some of these things we can do today are awesome, and yet we can't solve our problems and our troubles. What's wrong? Well, I've been saying there has to be a cause for every effect. There has to be a reason. And the one reason back of all of our troubles is that our problems are spiritual in nature, and the things we are achieving and accomplishing are all physical and material in nature. Now, in the physical and the material realm, we're doing wonderfully, and we're getting along. As I say, if those people, some of the great men of the world who died in the 19th century, were to come awake and come alive today and look on this world, they would be absolutely dumbfounded. And yet, before our troubles, mankind is absolutely helpless. Our troubles, as I say, are spiritual in nature, and we don't understand spiritual problems. To us, there's something we don't see. You don't see spirit, and you don't see spiritual equations, spiritual problems, and you can't understand them with a normal, natural mind. And that's where our trouble is. Our knowledge is nearly all in the material and the physical realm. And yet, there is a missing dimension. And the missing dimension is primarily in the spiritual realm. And most people just simply don't realize it. Now, leaders do not know what man is. They don't know why we're here on the earth. Were we put here, or did we just happen? Well, they mostly think we just happened. That's what they've been taught in school, in college, in the university. You know, Winston Churchill said before the United States Congress, I've mentioned this so many, many times because it's so very important. He said, there is a purpose being worked out here below. When he said here below, he implied a higher power above working it out. But how many people know there is a purpose that is going on and that we're working across purposes to that purpose? And we're in trouble. Humanity is living in conflict with the way that would bring us happiness and peace. So we don't have happiness and peace. We just have material gadgets. We just have tremendous material things. The world is giving acceptance to the very ways of life that are producing all of our troubles. And yet the world is giving absolute acceptance to it. Now there's another thing. We seem to think, and even so many religionists will tell you, that wrong, or sin as they call it in religion, they say is doing whatever you think is wrong, whatever man thinks is wrong, and man decides for himself what he thinks is right and what he thinks is wrong. In other words, this sin question. Now, I was brought up in a very highly regarded Christian denomination, and I know that the church, I didn't know very much about what the church believed, that's true, but I did know a few things. I knew it was wrong to go to a motion picture at any time. Well, we didn't have really motion pictures much at that time when I was a little boy. I remember when the Nickeldums came, and that was all just black and white, and you could go in for 5 cents. It didn't last long, though. But there was a theater, and even going to a theater was wrong. A pair of dice were a sin. Just a pair of dice, no matter whether you used them or not. If you had a pair in your house, it was a sin. And as I say, going to the theater was a sin. Well, you know, we boys, we were mean little rascals, and we would slip away when our parents didn't know it on a Sunday afternoon and go to the matinee to the theater. We're living in a world where you despise authority, you try to get away from authority, children try to get away from the authority of their parents, and parents don't want the authority of God over them at all, above everything. They don't want any authority, they want to decide for themselves what they want to do. They want to do what they want to do. Well, now, world events are approaching toward a final grand smash explosion in this world. It's an explosion that can, and if there isn't, that great unseen strong hand from someplace who will intervene and prevent, it's an explosion that will erase all human life from this earth. For the first time, I've said it before, I say it again and again and again. Or as Franklin Roosevelt used to say when he was president, again and again and again. I say that for the first time in all history of mankind, the weapons exist now, and science and technology and industry have produced the weapons that can blast all human life from off the face of this planet Earth. And yet we seem to think that it's so awesome and so terrible that no one will dare do it. And we're trusting, not only trusting the leaders of the Kremlin and the leaders at the White House in Washington, and we feel that we can trust them, don't we? But do you realize that there are many smaller nations today that have atomic weapons? And one of them, a madman in one of them, could start the war that would expand into the world war that would erase all mankind from the face of this earth. Now, I told you good news a while ago, that isn't going to happen, but it isn't because man is going to prevent it. Man will not prevent it. It will have to be done to us and for us, because we won't be able to solve our own problem ourselves. That explosion is coming, and some things are going to come that are going to concern the United States. Now, I said in the beginning, if you knew what is prophesied for the United States, I mean the United States, and what is going to happen here to this nation, mentioned in the Bible, you would really pay attention. Or else you would just say, well, you'd shrug your shoulder and say, well, I'm not going to pay any attention to it. I don't believe it. Because very few believe God anyway. Adam and Eve didn't. Very few believe Jesus when he was on earth. But I want to show you what God said himself. The eternal God inspired a man by the name of Isaiah to quote him and to say this. This is what he said. Who hath measured the waters in the hollow of his hand? He means the waters of the ocean. Who has taken the waters of the whole ocean and measured them in his hand, and meted out heaven with a span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales, and the hills in a balance? What man has been able to do that? I've just told you a little while ago the marvelous things that man has been doing, but man can't do that. Oh, no, he can't do that. That is what God himself has done. Continue. And I'm reading this in the 40th chapter of Isaiah, and I began with verse 12. Verse 12 in the 40th chapter, Isaiah 40. Continuing now. Who hath directed the Spirit of the Eternal, or being his counselor, hath taught him? Man thinks he is so wise, he is so competent, and he's so perfect in his own estimation. I guess man thinks he could teach God a lot of things that God doesn't know. Now, God is challenging him, and he says, who could teach God? You better think this one over. Verse 14. With whom took he God? With whom took God counsel? And who instructed him and taught him the path of judgment and taught him knowledge and showed him the way of understanding? God knows the way of understanding, but human beings don't. If we did, and if we would walk the way of understanding, we wouldn't have our troubles. But as I say, that way of understanding is a spiritual way, and we don't seem to know anything about it. The world only knows the physical and the material ways. Verse 15, behold, the nations are a drop of a bucket, that is, in the sight of God, and compared to God. God is so great, so important. His power is so great. He created all of the planets of the whole vast universe. So what is even a single nation? Behold, the nations are as a drop of the bucket, and are counted as the small dust of the balance. Behold, he taketh up the isles as a very little thing. He might be referring there to the British Isles, or maybe he's referring to the Japanese islands, maybe the Philippine Islands. I'm going to be a day after tomorrow, I'll be on the way to the Philippine Islands, where I'll speak to a very large audience there, and I hope to have the First Lady on the platform with me, and I'll have another visit with the President of the Philippines. Oh yes, even the islands. Still, compared to Almighty God, they're a very little thing, and yet people don't have time in their mind, in their busy life of entertaining and amusing themselves, to even give God any thought. They want to put God out of mind. All right, let's continue. All nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted to him less than nothing and vanity. Whom then will you liken God, or what likeness will you compare unto him? Now, God himself has inspired people to say that. I tell you, people don't realize the greatness of the Creator himself, and yet he is a living, thinking personage with a master mind, a mind great enough to have designed everything you see. All living creatures, all living things. To design an oak leaf and a maple leaf coming on out of a tree and to cause it to grow out of the ground. No man could do that. It is he that sitteth upon the circle of the earth. People say the Bible doesn't even say that the earth is round. Well, it does right there. The circle of a round earth, in other words. And the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers that stretcheth out the heavens as a curtain. Compared to God, we're just like so many little grasshoppers. And the earth is like vanity and nothing but a lot of vanity. Verse 25, to whom then will you liken me, God says, or shall I be equal, says the Holy One? To whom are you going to liken God? Or will he be equal? Lift up your eyes on high, and behold, who hath created these things? But people don't like to do that, and they don't realize. Now, it is God who tells us the end from the beginning. I'm coming to that. But I want to read to you from the Moffat translation now in the 33rd Psalm, and beginning with verse 10. The Eternal wrecks the purposes of pagans. You know, nations have many plans. They have many ideas, and some of them are planning things that are not very good against other nations. But the Eternal wrecks the purposes of pagans and pagan nations. He brings to nothing what the nations plan. Things are not going to work out like the nations think they will. But the Eternal's purpose stands forever. As I quoted a while ago, as Winston Churchill said, there is a purpose being worked out here below. It is the purpose of God. And God's purpose will last from age to age, Happy is the nation whose God is the Eternal, the people that He has chosen for Himself. The Eternal looks down from heaven. From where He sits, He scans all who inhabit the world. God looks down from heaven. He scans everything, everybody. He is able to do that. Very few humans would be able to do that. He who alone made their minds, He notes all they do. You know, I used to think I had to prove whether or not God exists to myself. And I got to thinking, my mind is greater than anything that I myself can think out, plan, and bring to pass, and bring about, or anything that I can make. I cannot make anything as great as my own mind. Well, then my mind couldn't have made anything greater than itself. It took a greater mind to produce my mind and to produce your mind. And it's about time we began to realize that. Armies do not bring victory to a king. The warrior is not rescued by sheer strength. You know, World War II didn't end the way men wanted to end it. God determined how it was going to end. And I can take time to go back. I was broadcasting on radio during World War II, giving the news from day to day and week to week. And many of the things that happened at the end that determined the outcome of the war were things completely out of the hands of man. It was determined by the eternal God. He wrecks the purposes of pagan nations. He determines what is going to happen. Cavalry are in vain for victory. There's no winning for the strength of that. No, the Eternal's eye rests on His worshipers who rest their hopes upon His kindness that He may rescue them from death and during famine days keep them alive. It is God, and the nations need to turn to God because we are not able to solve our own problems. We just simply are not able at all. Now, I would like to turn to the 46th chapter of Isaiah, the 9th and the 10th verses. Isaiah 46. God says, I am God, and there is none else. I am God, and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, I will do all my pleasure. God determines what is going to happen in nations. Now, God has foretold what is going to happen, telling the end from the beginning. What does He say is going to happen to the United States? Would you believe it if you heard it and if you read it? Is your mind open? Are your eyes open to read it? What is prophesied to happen to these United States, to you and me and ours? Very few seem to know that. But I can tell you this. People simply don't understand Bible prophecy because the key that unlocks the door of prophecy, well, they have lost it. Perhaps it's always been lost from most minds, but it has been discovered. And I happen to know that key that will unlock prophecy. Approximately one-third of the Bible is prophecy telling what God says is going to happen in the future. Now, what does God say is going to happen to the United States of America? It was started about a little over 200 years ago by 13 original colonies and has grown to this great United States of 50 nations. What is going to happen? I have a booklet that I would like to have you read. It's not a booklet, really. It's a full book. The United States and Britain in Prophecy. The United States is definitely prophesied. Little nations like Ethiopia and Libya and other little nations are mentioned in the Bible. Even Russia is mentioned, and those who know the key understand that Gog and Magog in Ezekiel 38 and 39 is referring to Russia. But where is the United States mentioned in the Bible prophecies? As I say, about one-third of the whole Bible is prophecies, and about 90%, if not 95% of that, zeroes down on us today and the very time in which you and I are living now. Right down into this very day. This booklet will show you the missing key. There is a missing dimension in knowledge. That missing dimension is the Word of God, and you can't understand that unless you understand where the United States is mentioned in prophecy. This is a book that will open your eyes to many, many, many different things. Now, I think that's perhaps most of you won't read that at one sitting. Some of you would. But it's quite a little book to just give to you. And I'll send it to you gratis, no charge, no follow-up or request for money. Nobody's offering anything like that. I'll tell you this. This is something nobody else believes. But if you're willing to look with your own eyes and to believe what you see plainly in the Word of God, as I say, Adam and Eve didn't believe God's Word. He talked to them in person. They didn't believe Him. Jesus came and preached to thousands, and only 120 out of those many, many, multiple thousands believed what He said. I wish I had time and I'd show you that they just didn't believe Him. But I would like to send you that book. That's the most important book, I believe, in one sense, that we have ever sent out. We've sent out some very, very important books, but that is a key book. Very, very important. Now, I'll send you a copy, or you can get a larger copy, and a little bit larger type, a little bit better paper, nicer binding, of course, that you can buy in the bookstores if you want. Or I'll send this to you without any cost or any charge or any follow-up. All you do is send your request to me, Herbert W. Armstrong, in Pasadena, California, 91123. All the address you need, Herbert W. Armstrong, Pasadena, California. So don't put it off. Send it immediately. Herbert Armstrong saying goodbye until next time.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Herbert W. Armstrong. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Herbert W. Armstrong.